From Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse. Thanks for joining us. We're talking about an interesting show that's being put on at the Commonweal Theater in Lanesboro, Minnesota. We've been affiliated with the Commonweal for a long, long time, and they've got yet another great season, including this play, Ugly Lies the Bone. And it's about a soldier named Jess who is back in the States after having spent some time overseas going through some really harrowing circumstances. And joining us to talk about those harrowing circumstances is the actor who portrays Jess, Laurie Roberts. Joining us from the Commonweal Theater. Laurie, thank you very much for being with us on Newsmakers today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Ezra. It's nice to be here.
Certainly. With us as well is Adrienne Sweeney, who is the Associate Artistic Director at the Commonweal and the Director of External Relations. And Adrienne has been with us before, and I'm glad you're back, Adrienne. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having us. It's always a pleasure to chat with y'all.
So let's start with you, Laurie. This Ugly Lies the Bone. It's the story of Jess after her honorable discharge from the United States Army. Sort of set the scene for us.
Yeah, so this is an interesting story because we're starting sort of at the end of her journey in a lot of ways. The fact that is that she's gone off to war. This is her third deployment, and she's survived an IED attack. So she has suffered third degree burns over a third of her body. She's on her way back home, she's been in the hospital in Texas for 14 months. So she's already gone through quite a bit of a story already. But the play begins when she comes home, and her home is Florida's Space Coast in 2011. So I don't know if you remember back in 2011, but that's when NASA finished their shuttle program. So that's when they had the last launch of the shuttle program over at Kennedy Center. So Jess is returning to a home that's suffering an identity crisis that's almost as complicated as her own identity crisis. And she's just having to confront her family and friends and a town that she doesn't recognize anymore.
Of course, characters like Jess, I mean, there are so many, all too many, quote-unquote real people who have faced those circumstances. But is this character specifically based on an individual person, or is this a story from the mind of the playwright?
A little of both, I think. Lindsay Ferrantino, the playwright, she actually is from Titusville, Florida, and she... I think she's friends with someone who was working in Veterans Affairs. And so she had stories coming through from different veterans through her friend. But I think there's a veteran who also experienced an IED attack, also went through burn therapy, and went through a virtual reality therapy session that this play is also exploring. That particular Army veteran, I think, is who this story is loosely based on. And there was a GQ article that came out about him and the virtual reality worlds that he was undergoing treatment in.
So
inside of.
Yeah. Tell me, as you learned more about this particular role, what attracted you to it? What makes you excited about it?
Oh, so many things. This role is the character is dealing with so many different layers of identity crisis. So as an actor, I'm having to think about how she's physically changed. How do I find that physicality in my body? Of course, having never experienced the traumas that she has. And in addition to that, she's also dealing with emotional issues. Like, she's dealing with PTSD. She's dealing with Just the problem of coming home from deployment and feeling like you're kind of an alien. So all of these issues that she's working through are things that are very exciting and sort of scary and challenging for an actor.
You touched on some of the aspects of the recovery process that Jess is going through, including the virtual reality oriented therapy that she's working through. Is talk about what that means. Like, what do you mean when you say virtual reality therapy?
Yeah, thanks, Ezra. So this is something that I discovered as we started working on the play. Virtual reality therapy is something that I believe was initially developed through the University of Washington as a pain management therapy. So what was happening was you would have patients undergoing burn treatments. So that's one of the most traumatizing parts of dealing with burns is the treatment to recover from that process. It's very painful. So what was developed by the university and these researchers was a virtual reality therapy where the patient gets to immerse themselves in a kind of snow world. So it's sort of snowy vistas, and there's Paul Simon music, and so the idea is that when the patient is undergoing this virtual reality therapy, their senses are being bombarded. So it's like they're being immersed into this world that's full of snow and music, and because the patient's sensory world is being overwhelmed, they're not thinking about their pain that's happening while their burns are being treated. So that's the concept that the playwright is working from when she's creating Jess's virtual reality
Okay.
world.
All right. Adrian, I'm curious, as you're assembling a season, I know you probably, everyone involved probably brings ideas to the table and things like that. How did you land on this particular production for this year?
We have a former board member who is a dear friend of the theater company and who's worked here as a director probably 17, between 17 and 18 times. And at the time, he was on the board and he was on the program committee, and he found this play. I don't know how he found this play. He was probably reading and researching small cast plays. And he sent it to me and he said, you have to do this play. And we all read it and were felled by the beauty and the intensity of this play, this story, just the story, the reality that it speaks to the experiences of so many of our veterans who, because it's a bigger situation, as Laurie was saying earlier, it is, of course, about Jess and her injuries and her recovery, but it's about how do our veterans return and reassimilate into their communities, their families, their homes. And so it has a much broader perspective than you would initially think, because it's also, as Laurie said, dealing with the decline of a tourist community. Laurie's character has a sister, and they're dealing with a mother who has dementia and their own aging process. So it's shockingly relevant to everyone, despite or because of the incredible specificity with which Lindsay Fiorentino has crafted the script. So when I read it, as someone who is always looking for strong female characters, I was so moved and so overwhelmed, and it spread through the company, and we just knew that it had to be part of our season. And to be completely honest, Laurie and her husband Cody, they're relatively new to the company. They've been here, what, Laurie, 3 years now.
Yeah, but 2.5, yeah.
And just having watched Laurie in previous performances, we knew that this would really give her an opportunity to shine. She's a glorious and ephemeral physical actor, just beautiful. And we knew that this would be a real vehicle for her to show the breadth of her work and the depth of her work. And we were certainly not wrong about that. She's just stunning to watch on stage. So then we pick a number of shows. We have five shows that we need to program. And those shows, as you and your listeners may know, run in rotating repertory. So then it's a question of, well, where do we put this show? Where do we slot this in to give it the audience that it deserves? So it's just part of a much bigger picture, much bigger puzzle. But we're just so elated that we were able, because it just came to our table last year. So we're just thrilled that we were able to put it into the rotation right away.
I'm thinking about the era that this play is from. It takes place in 2011, and so when my whole life, when you watch like war movies or veteran stories or something like that, you have different things. You have sort of the real trials of like World War I stories before any kind of technology and modern like air forces and things like that. And then you have like the World War II era, where that's often portrayed as the whole country gets behind the cause and rallies around the troops and all of this thing. And then you have like the Vietnam era, where those stories are portrayed often as like the almost the forgotten veterans from the war everybody wishes never happened, and that kind of thing, and how those many of those people are portrayed as having fallen through the cracks, and that sort of thing. Portrayals, although there are many at this point, but portrayals from this era, from this post 9/11 conflict era, are newer than all of that. Does that make this a more interesting work to dig into from an artistic perspective? Adrian, we'll start with you.
Sure, absolutely. I think it's fascinating. It really is. I've had so many conversations, so many great conversations with veterans, with veterans organizations. As I oddly, I had nothing to do with this show artistically. I really put my marketing hat on for this show, and we went whole hog marketing the production. And speaking to so many vets, you really hit the nail on the head there. Our country's perspectives on war and our soldiers, the folks who now voluntarily go into service, it has changed. And I think it's really, I don't want to say easy, but it is sort of easy for us to say, okay, that's someone else's problem. That's over there. Like you said, Ezra, in a very different way than World War II, where everybody was on the same team, got really rallied behind the troops. So this has a very different perspectives. And that is one of the things that Jess has to deal with when she comes home and is trying to reconnect with former friends, former loved ones, family members, having to not only deal with these horrors that she has dealt with, not only having to deal with her own physical horror, but then somehow having to justify it and explain her decisions. And so again, this script is so layered. And I do think that it made me think really differently. Made me examine my own thoughts and preconceived notions of what our current active military personnel are dealing with, and our current recently retired military personnel have dealt with. And of course, that all goes all the way back to, as you said, the Vietnam War. I was actually speaking with another journalist who himself was an active duty service person in Egypt. And he just talked very candidly about, you know, making the connection between what Jess is going through, which is when you come home, Laura, you said she feels like an alien. That's exactly what he said. And, you know, for Jess's character to voluntarily do three tours and to have to defend that decision is a really shocking thing to watch. It's shocking to watch her be put on the spot when we should all be supporting and rallying around this person as they come home.
Lori, this is not a character from history. This is someone who is, if it were in fact an actual real person, like this is somebody who is a contemporary of yours. How does an actor approach that sort of thing differently than someone who is just sort of from a different era or is a figure from the longer past?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think when approaching a contemporary character like Jess, there's some things that make it easier. You know, it's like, oh, this language sounds like something I could say. This could come out of my mouth, you know. And there's different assumptions about her environment, right? Her given circumstances. What it means to be a woman in 2011 in Florida versus a woman in 1830 England or something. Those are different, totally different people. And yet they still want the same things overall. We still want love and happiness and feeling like we're home. So working on this character there were different challenges, I'll say that. It's easier in some ways to slip into a contemporary character like Jess, but she's presenting a lot of things that I just don't know about. And to speak to your last question a little bit too, one of the things that's interesting about this story in terms of a veteran returning from war in 2011 is the fact that she is a woman returning from war in 2011. And technically it was, I think 2013 was when women were technically allowed in combat. So her particular journey is unique because the story of women in the army in that era is there's a kind of, what do we do with women who are returning from war? That's, I think, even a little different than how do we deal with the men returning from war? So it almost worked like a period piece for me because that entire world is like stepping into a different place. And so there's layers of understanding that I needed to work through in order to best love and share Jess with the world.
Lori, when you're exploring this kind of character, a soldier like Jess who's been through everything that she's been through, who has been traumatized the way she has been traumatized, mm-hmm. You know, you dig deep into that to try to understand as best you can and portray as realistically as you can what that character is going through. As a person, what kind of effect does that have on you dealing with that kind of material and exploring that level of trauma and her difficult recovery process?
Yeah. Wow. It's really important, I think, for actors to be clear that taking care of ourselves, our mental health and our physical health, that should be first. I think we kind of, sometimes we have this glamorized idea of like the method actor, like a Joaquin Phoenix type or someone who sort of throws themselves into a project And for a character like Jess, who's just seen and experienced more than I'm sure I ever will in this way, I take a lot of time to be sure that my body is healthy, that I'm taking care of myself, I'm stretching, I'm exercising, and that I'm able to step into the show and healthily step out of the show. Because doing, I mean, we were doing two shows a day for a couple weeks, and that was a tough one. I think that it I think that there is a process in acting where you kind of let yourself believe on some level that you are this person, but you have to be able to get out of that mindset. And in order to best honor the people who've experienced things anything close to what Jess has experienced, I want to tell that story as accurately as I can. And that does mean digging really deep and finding a way to let my heart just be part of everything that I'm doing on stage, as much as I can. But yeah, it does take a toll, and I just you just have to take care of yourself and just be aware.
We're talking about the Commonweal Theater's production of Ugly Lies the Bone. It's about a soldier named Jess returning from overseas duty to her hometown of Florida and all of the things that go with that. Our guests today are Laurie Roberts and Adrian Sweeney, and they're with the Commonweal Theater in Lanesboro, Minnesota. And our conversation is going to continue. We're going to talk a little bit more about Commonweal, what's going on this season, and things like that. But Adrian, I want to set give people some information about where they can get tickets if they're interested in this show, and how they can find out more information.
Well, the best thing to do is head right on over to commonwealththeater.org, and right on the homepage, there's some links to take you to the show page. And I highly recommend, if you're even thinking about coming to this show, there are some amazing supplementary material. I don't want to make people think that they have to take a class to come to this show, because that's not the case at all. They're very real people dealing with very real things. But if you're someone who likes to have a little more background, to kind of get a little bit more nuance, there are some great resource and supplementary materials on the show page. But either way, go right to our website and you can purchase tickets. Also, of course, you can call 800-657-7025 and make reservations. And we would just love to have you share this story with us.
That sounds good. We'll continue our conversation with Adrian and Laurie in just a moment. Right now, you're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. If you've missed part of our conversation today, you can find them all on our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. That's wpr.org/newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. Newsmakers continues in just a moment here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. We're visiting today with Adrian Sweeney and Laurie Roberts from the Commonweal Theater. We've been talking about the play Ugly Lies the Bone. Adrian, I want to come back around to you and talk about, in addition to Ugly Lies the Bone, which is running now and will be running for some time, what else is going on this season at Commonweal?
Well, we're already deep in rehearsal for the second show of the year, which is a hilarious comedy called The Outsider. And it's a political satire, completely nonpartisan, but it tells the story of Ned Newley, who is a brilliant lieutenant governor of an unnamed state, who is also very introverted, very shy, and very much not a politician. After his boss gets fired for a scandal, he is thrust into the limelight, and he is really an amazing public servant who is on the verge of being ousted until a band of kind of ragtag misfits sort of help him sculpt his image and take his place as the rightful governor of this unnamed state. It's really funny. It's an inside look at the image makers, the imaging that goes into the political world that we're used to now. But it is funny and it's just filled with sweet, sweet, sweet people. So that will start at the beginning of May and then it will run in rep with Ugly Lies the Bone. So is, which is always the case at the Commonwealth, you're going to get two shows in a weekend, this incredible drama, Ugly Lies the Bone, and then you can get some knee-slapping comedy with The Outsider. After Ugly Lies the Bone closes, we'll be doing the Neil Simon farce Rumours, set in the 80s, so we'll take a little time travel there, and hopefully side-splitting time travel. And then the fourth show of the year is Doubt, a Parable. It is a searing drama, award-winning, Tony Award-winning drama by John Patrick Shanley. And it was made into a film with Meryl Streep and Philip Seymour Hoffman about, it's set in the 60s, and it is a priest and a sister in a conservative Catholic parish. The sister decides or gets it into her head that the priest is involving himself with a young student, and it is a battle of wills. It's really just a fascinating. There are four people in the show, and it is an incredibly beautifully written, really moving play. It's been on our list forever, and in fact, we had it slotted for the fall of 2020. We remember how that went. We've just been wanting to get it back on our stage since well before, well pre-COVID. And we're thrilled to have that in our fourth slot. And then the fifth slot, our holiday show, is Christmas at Pemberley, Miss Bennett's Christmas at Pemberley. And it's an imagined sequel of sorts to Jane Eyre's Pride and Prejudice, where Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, where the middle sister Mary finally gets her time in the spotlight. So that is a delightful and charming romantic comedy for the holidays. So that's our lineup for the year. We're really thrilled with the variety and all that we have to offer folks.
So it's a repertory company in the sense that you have actors playing multiple roles throughout the season. Lori, are you in any of the other four plays?
Yes, I will be in Rumours. So shifting from this wonderful family drama of hope to a riot, laugh riot. Neil Simon should be a nice soft landing out of this show. And then I will also be in Miss Bennett Christmas at Pemberley for the holiday show. And my husband and I are playing Elizabeth Darcy and Fitzwilliam Darcy. Is that his name? Anyways, we're playing those characters, which makes me very delighted.
It sounds wonderful. I know that there are always opportunities, Adrian, for that the Commonweal takes advantage of to offer education to people who are looking to get into theater in one way or another. Talk about your educational efforts.
Actually, I'm going to pivot and punt that to Laurie. Laurie is our director of education.
Oh, perfect. Well. Wonderful. Lori, tell me all about the educational efforts, as I obviously meant to ask you.
Yeah, no problem. So we offer student matinees, and we'll have some of those coming up in the fall and winter for students at schools around the tri-state area. So we'll have, morning matinees for, I believe we'll offer them for Rumors, and I'm not sure if we have any for Doubt, but we'll definitely have some for Miss Bennett Christmas at Pemberley. So we'd love to get as many students in the doors as possible for those. Otherwise, we have our apprentice program, which consists of inviting five. Is it five? This year's four, right? Pre-professional theater artists who are just out of school, and they'll join us to support creating the season. And our apprentices also get to put on their capstone project. So that'll go up in, I guess that's next April. So far from now, but excited for them to join us at the end of May. And yeah, a whole new burst of energy from the apprentices is always appreciated at the Commonweal.
So how important in the development, if you're looking at a career in the arts, how important are those young artist programs? Did you participate in things like that when you were finishing your degrees and whatever?
Yeah, I would love to talk about that. I did an internship with the Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park, which is a repertory theater in Ohio. And that program was very different from what we offer here, but it's just an opportunity to immerse yourself in a professional theater, learn from, you just get thrown right into the mix. And instead of what theater school often offers, which is kind of this little nurturing playground for you to learn how to be an artist and grow. An internship or an apprenticeship at a professional theater company, it shows you the grit that's required to be in the theater arts. Yeah, and it just shows you how we actually make theater. The business side of it, the creative side of it, and everything in between. And with the Commonweal, because we work in an artist administrator model, which is frankly pretty unique. There's not a lot of theater companies that work this way. It just means that while I get to act on stage, I'm also working with our apprentices and writing grants and things like that. And so our apprentices come in and they are also invited in that model. So they attend our marketing meetings, our production meetings, and they're involved in performing on stage and doing stage management. So it's such a wonderful opportunity for a young person who's not only, stepping out of their theater education, but probably asking themselves, is this actually possible? Can I actually make a career of this in this country somewhere? And so having the chance to really see the joys and the challenges that are always present is such an important thing for a young person to experience if they're thinking about toughing it out and getting into theater, because it does require some metal for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Adrian, what about you? What role did either some kind of apprenticeship or young artist program play in your development as a professional in the theater?
It didn't really. I didn't have an opportunity for something like this. I went to grad school. And in the university at the University of Arizona. And if we were lucky, we would be cast in a small role at the professional theater in Tucson. And I was one of those people lucky enough, but that was just for one show, one credit on my resume. The thing that is, I think one of the things that's so fascinating is Laurie touched on about our program here. For, I don't even want to say for better or worse, but the sheer number of professional theaters in this country is dwindling so much and so fast, certainly post-COVID, but also pre-COVID. Resident repertory companies are a thing of the past now. So if someone wants, if a theater artist wants to create theater, odds are they're going to have to do it themselves. So coming here shows you every single piece and part that goes into putting theater up on a stage. And it isn't just picking a show and learning your lines. I came to theater, it was my second career, actually. My first career was marketing, which I loved, but I also loved acting. And so to land somewhere like the Commonwealth, this is my 21st season, actually, but to land somewhere at the Commonwealth where I get to do both and then some is really fulfilling. It's very fulfilling. And I feel that because of the community that we're in and our relationship with the community, I can't speak to another situation because I really haven't had that many, but it feels so much more fulfilling than dropping down, doing a show, fighting tooth and nail to get that show, and then constantly thinking about, okay, where's my next show going to be? What's my next job going to be? Mm-hmm. So it offers a really random sense of stability in theater, which doesn't happen often across the country.
It's difficult for artistic organizations like yours to survive anyway, as you indicated, the declining number of theater companies in the country. But it's interesting to me that your organization is able to do what it does in such a small town. Lanesboro, Minnesota is not a large place. How is it different? Maybe you don't have those comparable experiences elsewhere, doing the same thing that you're doing right now. But what are the differences that you're aware of running a company like yours in Lanesboro versus running a company like yours in a more densely populated area?
Well, I think the big thing is the community. It is a small community. We have 750 people here in Lanesboro. And then, of course, the surrounding vicinities that we call, it's really a tri-state region, the Southeast Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa area. Mm-hmm. I think it, for me, in my perspective, it's that community relationship. It's that relationship with our community. We've been here now 34, 35 years, and we have built up a symbiotic trust. So our community trusts us and we trust our community. And that, I think, is very different than making theater in a major metropolitan area. We have a situation where, because we're in rep, we have over 1,200 season pass holders and over 500 annual supporters who make a commitment to be with us for up to 10, 15 years. And they're coming to see the breadth of our work, not a specific show. I know I have a lot of friends in the Twin Cities who will do a show and people will go to see a show. Whereas here, I think that the Commonwealth is more of an experience. I'm going to the Commonwealth, what's playing? Sometimes, I don't know, I'm just going to the Commonwealth. We'll see what's playing. And I think the access and the interaction that our artists have within the community makes it feel, and because it is, that the art is for our community. It is our community is part of it, and we are a part of them. And that isn't just Lanesboro, but again, it's that Southeast Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa region where it's a place where people feel comfortable coming to. If they don't know the show, they feel comfortable coming to. If they've never been to theater, it's a warm and welcoming space. So it is a very, very different feeling. It's a very different vibe. As I said, I have friends from the cities who will come down here. And also, we don't have to really worry about what our next gig is. You know, I have input into, I would like to do this play. It doesn't always mean it's going to get done. But, you know, Laurie was able to say, I would like to play this role. And you have ownership and an agency over your career that other artists might not have. And that that lends to an allegiance and a connection with both the company and the community that I think is very, very special and also very, very unique.
It's interesting to hear about, and I'm glad to have had this opportunity to speak to you both today. I want to take one more opportunity to let people know where they can find more information about Commonweal, in particular, where they can find information about the show that you're in the middle of now, Ugly Lies the Bone, in which Lori Roberts plays Jess. So one more time, what's the website, and if people don't want to use the website, a phone number where they can reach you?
Absolutely. The website is commonwealththeater.org and the phone number is 800-657-7025. And I do want to remind your listeners that we are a very proud Blue Star Theater. So any active or retired military personnel and their families can get a Blue Star discount. That it is Blue Star. So when you go to order your tickets, you type in Blue Star at checkout and you'll get that discount. But also want to let folks know that we are very committed to not having financial hurdles. So if finances are a problem for people, just reach out to our box office and we can see what we can do to help get you and your family into the Commonweal. We have student discounts, senior discounts, of course. So, and then we also have pay what you can shows, pay what you can performances for every show as well.
Adrian Sweeney is the Associate Artistic Director and the Director of External Relations for the Commonweal Theater. Adrian, thanks a lot for being here today on Newsmakers.
Ezra, thank you so much for having us. We're always so grateful.
And Lori Roberts is playing Jess in Ugly Lies the Bone at the moment. And as you heard earlier, she's also in charge of the education programs at Commonweal Theater. So, Lori, thanks for joining us as well.
Thanks so much for having me, Ezra.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to reach out to our show, you can send me an email, newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. And as you might have read or heard or gotten an email from us about, we're making some changes at Wisconsin Public Radio. We're really excited to be launching two networks later in May, WPR News and WPR Music. And that will have an effect on this program, which will be retiring. So let's talk about the future right after this on Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us today. And as promised, we're talking about the future right now. You have heard us mention over the last several weeks that some changes are coming to WPR. Basically, we're sort of relaunching our networks. We're going to have two networks, WPR News, which you'll be able to hear in the La Crosse area and throughout the Cooley region on 90.3 FM. And then we're going to have WPR Music, which you'll be able to hear on 88.9 FM. You've already seen a brand new version of our website launch. That's WPR.org. I want to tell you a part of that website that's dedicated to the information about how we're reorganizing our on-air services as well. You can find all that information at wpr.org/new. It's wpr.org/new. But the upshot of it is that starting on Monday, May 20th, WPR's two current networks, NPR News and Music, and the Ideas Network are going to be renamed and restructured as WPR News and WPR Music. So, like I said, in La Crosse, 90.3, where you currently hear the Ideas Network, is going to be WPR News. and 88.9, where you currently hear NPR News and Music, is going to be WPR Music. The chief differences on those two networks, let me tell you about it. On WPR News, you're going to hear a lot of the great news and analysis that you hear right now. You're going to hear a brand new Wisconsin-based talk show hosted by Kate Archer-Kent and Rob Ferret. It's going to be called Wisconsin Today, and it's going to be on weekdays. And then during Morning Drive and Afternoon Drive on WPR News, you'll hear NPR's Morning Edition and NPR's All Things Considered. Those shows currently are on the NPR News and Music Network. They're moving over to that brand new WPR News Network in the Morning Drive and Afternoon Drive slots. So we're going to have all of our news and talk-oriented programming on the same network, so people that are looking for that material will know exactly where to find it. We're hoping that makes it easier for everybody. On the other hand, on the WPR Music Network, we're going to have, for the first time, we're going to have a Morning Drive classical music program and an Afternoon Drive classical music program. So more details about all of that stuff will be available coming up. And you can find information about all these programming changes on our website, wpr.org/news. So I hope you're as excited as I am about WPR News and WPR Music coming. Now, of course, with all of those changes come some others. We're reworking the way that we do local content, so our regionally based content here on WPR. For years and years, for about 50 years now, you've been listening to Newsmakers on WLSU. Even before WLSU was part of Wisconsin Public Radio, you heard Newsmakers starting back in the 70s on WLSU. When WLSU became part of Wisconsin Public Radio, Newsmakers also began airing on WHLA, which is now the Ideas Network station here in the La Crosse area. So like right now, you hear Newsmakers weekday mornings or Friday mornings at 10 o'clock on the Ideas Network. That's no longer going to be the case starting on May 20th. In fact, May 17th is our last episode of Newsmakers. I'll tell you about that in a little bit. But what's happening is that we're redeploying the resources that currently go into the production of Newsmakers, and we're still going to be doing local content. We're going to be having that regionally created content as part of Morning Edition. You'll hear it sprinkled throughout Morning Edition across the weeks and months, and then you'll see it online as well at WPR.org. So between on air during Morning Edition and online at WPR.org, you'll still hear great content. Well, you hear some content from me. Whether it's great or not, you can decide that, but you still hear great reporting from our local WPR news reporter, Hope Kerwin. You'll still see some great content from our WPR news producer, John Davis, and others. And so the mission continues, and hopefully we'll be doing it even better after May 20th, after we make some of these changes. Remember, if you want any more information about some of the changes going on at WPR.org, just go to WPR.org/new and get all of the information about our new networks, WPR News and WPR Music, which are launching on May 20th. If you want to have a chance to get some of your questions answered in person, you can sign up at WPR.org/new. You can sign up to come to our Learn More session, which is happening on Tuesday, May 14th. That's this coming Tuesday at the Capella Performing Arts Center on the corner of King and 8th Street in La Crosse. And I hope you sign up. We'll save you a place. If you can't figure out how to sign up, just come. Just the important thing is that you come. We're going to have a great time talking about the future of WPR. Our director is going to be here from Madison. Sarah Ashworth is going to be here and able to take all of your questions. We'll have a little presentation about what's going on. We'll have a formal Q&A session where you can ask your question and get answers. And then we're all going to hang around after and have an informal meet and greet where you can ask any questions that we didn't have time to get to during the presentation. If you'd like to participate in that, remember, you can sign up and save a seat by going to WPR.org/new, or you can simply show up at the Capella Performing Arts Center at 6 o'clock this coming Tuesday, and we would love to see you there. A special show on Newsmakers is coming up next week. We're going to say goodbye to the show by talking to a few former Newsmakers hosts who all still work with me here at WPR. We'll be hearing from John Davis, Hope Kerwin, and Maureen McCollum. That'll be next week on Newsmakers as we say goodbye to our friend and talk show Newsmakers and send it off into retirement, so to speak. So join us for that program. In the meantime, you can hear that program, Newsmakers, Friday mornings at 10 on the Ideas Network 90.3, Friday evening at 7 on NPR News and Music 88.9, and of course, we're always online, wpr.org/newsmakers. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.